A convoy had come in here many days, weeks ago, and had gone out hours ago. A big convoy. He glanced up the exit road, half expecting to see trucks or tanks coming down it back to the compound. Their tactical situation was not ideal. They had a small force of Brigantes holding out in the woods back of them. Somewhere, near or far, there must be the better part of 1,000 Brigantes. And up this road, he looked at the traces of the ground drives, there were a very large number of cyclo vehicles. Or flatbeds? Tanks? He heard their planes now. That sound wouldn't matter after all the uproar of this recent skirmish. And any convoy on that road wouldn't hear anything above their own motor drives. The vast canopy of treetops that made this place a twilight not only prevented anyone from looking down at the exit road and seeing anything on it, but also prevented anyone on it from seeing up. A poor tactical situation. They could not fight a convoy, probably escorted with tanks, in this water-saturated, hemmed-in forest. Their planes were of no use to them. He made his way over to the landing field. Sky. Not much sky, but enough to get ore freighters up and down through. Leaking sky, but sky. He hadn't seen any sky in 3 days. The soldiers were in the trees, covering the field. The mine radio bleeper was set in a 15-inch diameter vine that coiled like a huge snake up a tall tree. Maybe this field had once been bigger, but the jungle and the trees had encroached deeply. The big marine attack battle plane wound down from directly overhead, letting the smaller battle plane cover it from above as was proper. Then the plane mushroomed a puddle of field water into a geyser and came to a halt. It was Dunaldine. He swung the door open and sat there, grinning, glad to see Johnny. Robert the Fox came rushing up. The side door of the big plane swung open, and the officer of the remaining part of their force looked questioningly. Robert waved to him to sit tight, no emergency, and got into the smaller battle plane with Johnny and Dunaldine. Johnny was rapidly filling Dunaldine in on the events.
"There's a convoy on that road headed for the main mine site,"
concluded Johnny.
"I think they came down here for fuel and ammunition and then went back."
"Ah,"
said Dunaldine.
"That explains it."
Typical Dunaldine. He had not been sitting quietly waiting for their call. He could get that, he said, back at the dam or way upstairs. So he'd left the big attack plane at the dam and on radio standby, so they could recall him. And he'd been keeping the main mine site, up at what they used to call Lake Albert, under surveillance by going way up and following normal traffic routes. His instruments and view screens could penetrate rain and cloud, even though they couldn't see a thing through the canopy of trees. The main mine site, he recalled, had been knocked out on day 92 by a pilot. McCardle? Yes, McCardle. And he'd had a bit of trouble. The cyclos had attempted to loft 2 battle planes, and McCardle had nailed them right at the hangar launch door, blocking it. He'd blown their power lines to bits and knocked out huge breathe gas and fuel and ammunition dumps. The cyclos had gotten 2 batteries of anti-aircraft into operation, and he'd had to knock those out. This was the fight where the co-pilot had been wounded, if Johnny and Sir Robert recalled. A very fighting mine site. Anyway, Dunaldine went on his overflights from 100,000 feet up during the last 3 days, he hadn't found any current movement in the place, but he showed them the pictures he'd gotten from his screens. Those apes had cleared away the hangar door. That's it there. And look over here, see? Those shadows under the trees at the edge of their field. No, over there. 10 battle planes on standby.